everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another week, and this time next week, football will be here in Philadelphia as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 66. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with Duke defensive line coach Ben Albert. I had a chance to work with Ben briefly during my days at Temple, and his resume speaks for itself with some of the defenses he has worked on the past few seasons. So I wanted to pick Ben's brain about that defensive line, and more importantly, how to best get after the quarterback, which we all know is such a big part of Jim Schwartz's defense here in Philadelphia. This week in Two Technique, Ben and I will talk about his favorite pass rush move and how he coaches it to his players, so be sure and stay tuned for that. Then we wrap it all up in Saturday Scouting, where I get into my notes on one of the more interesting names of rookies along the Eagles' defensive line to keep an eye on this summer. We've got a ton to get into, so let's not waste any time. I caught up with my friend Ben Albert to talk about how to get after the quarterback. Let's get to that interview now in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Very excited to be joined by a guy I had a chance to work with during my time at Temple University. I worked with him for about 6-7 months or so, associate defensive coordinator and defensive line coach now at Duke University, Coach Ben Albert. Coach, really welcome. I appreciate you coming on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be a part.
Well, the one question I always like to start off with when I have guests on the show is, you know, what is one part of rushing the passer? And you've got a very decorated career of coaching defensive line, outside linebackers, pass rushers. What is the one part of rushing the passer that's a bit underrated, that fans don't necessarily think about when they're watching the game on Saturdays and Sundays?
Well, the one thing that I always talk to my guys about is being a knowledgeable pass rusher. You know, you have young guys, and the first thing they want to say, coach, teach me, you know, all these different moves. And it's like, it's not about having 100 different moves. It's about having one move that you can master and having a counter off of it, and then having an understanding of how your opponent is trying to protect against you. You know, so I always talk about attacking the set, you know, based on a position of the offensive lineman. You know, offensive linemen set differently. For example, the tackles are more of a vertical set because they're setting the flanks of the protection, whereas the center and the guards are more of a horizontal set. You know, so just that knowledge alone is critical, and then understanding how to attack different protections and so forth.
So it's interesting. I'm interested that you brought that up, because that's one thing that the more I watch the game and the more I kind of take in, it's very apparent that you can watch a pass rusher and really get a sense of, you know what, this guy knows how to attack offensive linemen. He knows what it takes, not just the physical end of knowing how to use his hands, but the mental side of it, like you talked about. Have you found that, you know, over your career, what side of it is harder to teach? Is it that mental side, or is it harder to kind of get a guy to use his hands correctly and work on the timing and things of that nature from a physical side of it?
Well, I think you can there are different things you can do to help enhance a player's ability to use his hands and so forth. But, you know, some guys have a knack, an understanding of different things. Some guys have the ability to learn different things. There's a lot of different ways to skin the cat. You know, there's some guys who are, you know, they have great God-given talent and they're able to just run around people. There's some guys who don't necessarily have the speed, but they have the ability to be powerful. You know, so it's in part knowing what you can do. But with that being said, I also think that, you know, I think the mental part of it, you know, just having a basic understanding of, one, how the protections are set up, how teams are trying to protect against you, the type of pass game you're facing. All of those different things are very, very critical in helping you know, your players become great pass rushers, you know. Also, just being patient and understanding that if a team is running quick game, three-step screens and those types of things, you're probably not going to have a lot of sacks, for example. But that doesn't mean you can't have an impact on the game. You can knock passes down. You can retrace on screens and become active. And I always tell my guys in the screen game, you know, if we're not making the tackles, you know, on screens, then we're at a loss to begin with, you know. So just the level of effort physically and mentally is very, very, very important to become a great pass rusher.
Ben, what is the most important thing that a defender must have when he wants to rush the passer effectively? You know, is there, in your mind, based off your experience, is there a must-have for that role?
Yes. I think in order to be a great pass rusher, you have to be relentless. If you look at all the great pass rushers over the course of time, the one trait that stands out is how relentless they were in their pursuit of the quarterback. You know, because when you are identified as a pass rusher, one, teams are going to try to do things to negate your ability to affect the game. So, you know, when you get to that status, you know, now what? It all comes down to effort after that. So I think the one trait that I always try to look for in recruiting and all those types of things is the tenaciousness of the guys that, you know, that are in my circle. I want guys that, you know, if I always say I shouldn't have to coach effort. You know, I have a great deal of confidence in my ability to coach and bring out the best of my guys. But the one thing that I should never have to coach is effort. I always tell the guys, the one thing that you control is your effort. And if you give me great effort, I promise I'll give you great effort in my coaching. And if we can meet halfway in that agreement, then we'll be great together. So the one thing that I think all great pass rushers must have is a high desire, a high level of want to get to the quarterback.
I always love that. That competitive toughness is the term that was always thrown around during my days down there at Temple. And then also, when you talk about from an athletic standpoint, Ben, and you look at, you know, whether it's burst or quickness or balance, is there an athletic trait to you that is most important to have for a pass rusher?
Well, when I talk about rushing the passer, I always look at it from two different perspectives. One, inside pass rushers and outside pass rushers. The outside pass rushers, I think, have to have an ability to get vertically up the football field and put the tackles in stress. If they have the ability to do that, you know, regardless of how big they are, they can create power off of their speed. So, you know, I need to see a great first step. Guys that are able to jump. I call it jumping out of your stand. You know, guys that can do that on the edge. They have a distinct advantage. And then for the inside guys, you still want that burst vertically up the field. But you also need to have great power. And obviously, at either position, whether it's inside or outside, they have to have a great understanding of using their hands and being violent with their hands.
Ben, what does that a good first step look like as opposed to a bad one? You know, are you looking for, you know, that anticipation coming off the ball? Are you looking for, you know, a certain amount of yards gained with that first step? And what does a good one look like versus a bad first step?
Well, what I say in terms of footwork for a defensive lineman, there are two types of footwork. For a hi-hat, which is what we're talking about in terms of rushing the passer, I always talk about replacing the hand with your step. You know, you want to gain ground because the offensive lineman is trying to create distance. They're trying to create space. So I break the pass rush down into three phases. And the first phase is what I call the close phase. So I want to close the distance as fast as I can. And in order to do that, I need to be able to replace my hand with my step. So I talk about a replace the hand step in terms of my get off. It has to be at least that. hopefully more than that. Now, in terms of the run game, I talk about a foot in the ground step. In the old days, when I was coming up, you know, my coaches would always say a six inch step. Well, my argument was I don't know how much 6 inches is when I'm on a football field, but I do know whether or not my foot is in the ground when I make contact. So I don't use or refer to a 6-inch step in the run game. I refer to a foot in the ground step. I want my, if the hat is low and it's firing off at me, I need to be in a powerful position. And a man gets his power from the ground up. So I need to have my feet in the ground. Hence, I use the term foot in the ground step versus run game. Now, if it's high hat, I talk about replace the hand with the step. So, you know, when I talk about footwork, those are the two terms that I use. Replace the hand with your step on high hat. If it's low hat, you gotta react and get your foot in the ground, a foot in the ground step, and be powerful so you can stop a man's charge.
All right, so for the listeners, you can just close your eyes. You can imagine, a defensive lineman, his hand in the girt, whether it's a 3-point stance or if it's outside, sometimes even in a 4-point stance, you want to see that foot reach where those hands are pre-snap. So that's a good visual there from Ben. And again, you can follow Ben on Twitter at Coach Ben Albert, the associate defense coordinator and defensive line coach at Duke University. And Coach, everybody likes the ability to bend, you know, that flexibility when running the hoop. How important is that really, you know, when you're looking at pass rushers and the ability to get after the quarterback? And how tough is it for a pass rusher to be effective without that bend? Are they able to be effective without having that bend, that flexibility?
Well, I think that's critical. And I've actually gone away from using the hoops per se, because I think the angles are more radical. They're sharp turns. So you need guys that can put their foot in the ground and change direction on a sharp angle. So I use more to watch my guys practice and so forth. I don't use hoops because the angles are more rounded. I want guys to have radical turns. I want guys that can stick their foot in the ground and make a change of direction right then and there, whether we're in an individual pass rush or if we're working a game, you know. So I use cones, more of a directional landmines, more of a directional, because I want radical turns. I want sharp angles. I want the foot in the ground. I want to, you know, Coach Chiano, whom I work with for a short time at Rutgers, he used the term break foot, dry foot. And that kind of stuck with me. And, you know, it's a good reference, because I want guys to be able to stick their foot in the ground and with the next step be able to change direction to wherever they need to go. So the angles that I try to get my guys to manipulate are more radical, more sharp, you know, break foot, dry foot type, I'm changing direction on you before you can adjust to where I'm going kind of movement.
Coach, everybody likes to throw the term around setting the edge. What does that mean? What can fans look for in a player that is effective at setting the edge as a run defender?
Well, when you're talking about outside run, the first part of being successful in defending the run is setting the vertical edge of the defense. There's a difference between, like, in the pass game, you talk about containing the quarterback. But in the run game, you talk about forcing the run. And, I like to use the difference between the two, if you can relate it to a peacekeeping troop as opposed to a peacemaking troop. Peacekeepers, you never want to be a peacekeeper if you're in the military, because you're sent to a hostile territory and you're given rules not to fire, regardless of what the situation dictates. But if you're in a peacemaking kind of a situation, you go and you make peace. You know what you're there for, and you go and you set the thing, you set the tempo the way you want it to be. So that's the description that I like to imprint in my guys' mind. So in terms of the run game, I want to force the run inside of me. I don't want it to get outside of me, around my edge. So when we talk about the vertical edge of the defense, however deep the run is in the backfield, I want the defender to get to that point and set the edge and make sure that the ball is forced to his inside, to his help. Because if the ball is able to run around the outside of the defense, then it comes down to whether or not the offensive player is faster than the defensive player. know, and you never want to be in a foot race.
Coach, what are the three most important parts to defending the run as that edge defender? You talked about, you know, getting vertical, making sure that you're forcing that player, that offensive player back inside. But what are the three most important traits when you're looking for a player in that role?
Well, for one, you talk about the force player, which is the guy that's setting the vertical edge. Then you want your cutback player, which is the guy who are pursuing from inside out to the ball. And then you want somebody over the top, you know, running the alley, you know. So if you want to put into a descriptive kind of a term, you want your free hitters, your guys who are coming to make the tackle, you want them to be able to make the tackle in a phone booth. So you got your force player forcing the edge. You got your cutback players assuring that the ball is not able to go freely back against the grain. And then you have a topper, a guy that's running in that alley to come and make a tackle in a phone booth. So if I were to say the three major components of stopping the run game, obviously it would be your force, your cutback, and your alley player.
Ben, as a coach, if you say you've got a defensive end or if you've got a linebacker that it's really versatile, what does that mean as a fan? How important is that versatility for you on game day?
I think it's very, very, very important. You know, I had the privilege of working with Coach Brown the last 3 years, and, you know, we inherited a defense that was like 123rd in the country. We finished number one in the country in total defense this year. And, you know, the Sam linebacker position in our defense is, you know, we had a kid at BC named Matt Milano, and, you know, Matt led the team in TFLs. You know, he was amongst the team lead in sacks. And, you know, he had the ability to walk out and go and cover a slot out in space. So when you talk about versatility, that player is able to stay on the field regardless of the situation, because football is actually a game of situation. Is you know, every play is a distinct situation. You have first and 10, you have second and whatever, you have third down, you know, you have fourth down, you have goal line, you have red zone. You know, these are all different minor situations, and you have to be successful in fitting in and playing a role in all the various situations. So when you say you have a situational player, that player only fits for that particular situation. A guy who's versatile is able to stay on the field regardless of the situation. So when you talk about a linebacker that is a every down linebacker, that's what you're looking for. A guy that can, you know, if it's first and 10 and you need a linebacker that's, you know, capable of sticking his face in there and making a play in the run game and being physical, you want that guy there. And then when it comes to you drag a team into third and long, now you have a guy that you can bring them off the edge and rush the passer, or you can line them out and cover a slot, and he can be just as effective out playing out in space as he is rushing the passer. So that's what, you know, when you talk about defining a player that way, that's what you're looking for. You know, and it's very rare that you have a guy that can do those things. But the guys that can, you know, the Junior Seau, for example, those guys are at a premium.
Ben, you're at Duke now. You just mentioned you're at Boston College last 3 years. You're at Temple. You mentioned Rutgers as well. I'm going back through your bio, and I'm looking, and I'm like, all right, let's see some of the NFL players he's coached. And I'm looking at all the great players that you've coached that have gone on and done great things at both college and NFL level. And I go back to your days at Richmond, and I see a name there, and I said, you know what? I thought I had read that Joe Douglas was at Richmond during that time. So I went back and I checked again, and sure enough, the Eagles' new VP of player personnel, Joe Douglas, was at Richmond and played along the line when you were coaching there. Tell us about Joe Douglas, the player. What do we need to know? Obviously, we've heard so much about him now from a personnel side, but what was he like as a player?
Joe Douglas was a great player in college at the University of Richmond, and I actually had to coach against him every day. He was an offensive lineman, and you know, he was tough. He was physical. You know, he was knowledgeable of the game, and he was a leader, a great leader for our team. You know, we were able to win, you know, some championships during my time at Richmond, and it was all accredited to a, you know, the guys that we had, you know, like Joe. And actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think I may have, at the end of my playing career, I may have played against Joe, you know, prior to coaching Joe. So actually, we go way back, and he's a tremendous guy. I love him to death. And, you know, we had a great, great team. You know, we had a great guy as our head coach, Jim Reed, you know, a guy that cared about us, and we cared about one another. It was a tremendous experience. And that's what I try to emulate, you know, my coaching career. I never, you know, lose sight of that. You know, the fact that you have the ability to have an impact on people's lives, and those memories you develop last you for a lifetime. So I love Joe. He's going to do a great job at Philly, and I'm excited for him. And actually, you know, you guys actually, one of the guys that I coached, Connor Wojak at Boston College, you guys signed as a free agent with the Philadelphia Eagles. So I'm excited to see, you know, his career develop and take shape.
Absolutely. Well, Ben, the one thing I like to do whenever I bring players or former players or coaches onto the show is I like to ask them one position specific trait, one thing that they can really break down and focus in on. So we call the segment Two Technique. Let's get into it right now.
Time to get inside the mind of a player. It's time for Two Technique.
All right, Ben, so the big thing I want to ask you about is your favorite pass rush move and how you teach it to your players. So I have no idea what your answer is going to be here. I just want to throw it out to you. What is your favorite pass rush move and how do you teach it?
Well, the first pass rush move I teach to the young guys is what I call a chop, a flip, and a rip. And as I said earlier in the segment, I break the pass rush down into three different phases. And those three phases are close the distance. That's the first phase. The second phase I define as engaging. And then the final phase is what I call finishing. So if I were to talk about those three phases, it would be close, engage, finish. So chop, flip, and rip. So in the first phase, I'm going to close the distance, you know, obviously replacing my down hand, jumping out of my shoes, getting on top of the offensive lineman as fast as I can before he can be comfortable in his set. In my second phase, I want to be violent with my hands. I want to chop his hands down, you know, and get his hands down and away from me, off my body. And then the final phase, I'm going to take my second hand. I'm gonna slap across, and I'm gonna rip. And I like to use a high rip. I want to get my hand higher than my hat on the rip, and I want to finish and accelerate by the offensive lineman. So, you know, I like to teach that as a come out rush to the young guys, you know, guys that I have at camp and so forth. Because when you get into one-on-ones in those kind of scenarios, one, you're in the middle of the summer and you don't have full gear. So it has to be somewhat of a finesse type of a pass rush move. You know, and two, the last part of development as a football player, both offensive and defensive linemen, is their ability to, one, rush the passer and protect the passer. I think that's the final evolution of a lineman. You know, both offensive and defensive. So, you know, I like to teach that chop, flip, and rip move as a come out, as a finesse category type of a rush for those guys. You know, and I like to teach it that way because I can break it down and critique each phase of the rush. And if there's a breakdown in any one of those phases, I know exactly what I need to concentrate on with each individual player.
Well, Ben, I really, really appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. I know it's that time of year where coaches getting out of the building a little bit, spend some time with their families before the heat really picks up here and training camp comes in the next few weeks. Really appreciate the time here again for joining us on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast.
No, I appreciate you, and I appreciate being with my family, but I'm a full-time football coach, and I haven't worked a day in my life. I love it, and I appreciate you for inviting me to spend some time with you.
Great stuff from Ben. And again, you can follow him on Twitter just like I do at Coach Ben Albert. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. That's where I post all of the podcasts I'm a part of and all of our X's and O's content that we produce here at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And you know, I really appreciate everyone that promotes the podcast on social media. That's one way to support the show. And the other is to go on iTunes or Stitcher, give us a rating, and leave us a comment. Shout out to Rich Bobby on Twitter, who commented that he really enjoyed the episode a couple weeks ago with Travis Manger on game planning. Appreciate that, Rich. And that's why I think next offseason, I'm going to bring on some more of my coaching friends on the show to give you a real sense of what goes through their minds throughout the season. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to have Ben on today for that exact reason. So thanks to Rich and all of you out there for your continued support of this show and all of the rest of our podcast offerings on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. All right, let's keep this show going. I told you earlier that we'd get into my notes on a player that could catch your eye once camp opens up next week. Let's get to that now in Saturday Scouting.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
All right, so Ben just brought him up last segment, and that was Boston College defensive tackle Connor Wojcik, 6'0", 2'4", 291 pounds, so 6'2 and a half, 291. The Eagles brought him in as an undrafted free agent this past spring. A little bit undersized, but he makes up for it with his athleticism. He tested very well in the shuttles and in the jumps at his pro day and during this spring in the pre-draft process. And as a result, he had one of the higher Spark scores in this past draft class. And for those of you who don't know, the Spark number is a formula that was originally created by Nike to measure athleticism for high school athletes during college recruiting. And the folks over at SB Nation out in Seattle were able to crack that code and now able to spit out athletic measurements that take into account both size measurables and athletic testing numbers from the combine and pro days. Here's the big takeaway from here. According to that formula, only four defensive linemen over the last 5 years have been drafted that were more athletic than Connor Wojcik. So you've got a guy who's a little bit undersized, but he makes up for it in that quickness off the ball. Now, you go to his notes from when he was at Boston College. He lined up at nose tackle in their 4-3 scheme, mostly as a one technique, slid outside in some subgroups, but times the snap well, fires out of his stance quickly, very light on his feet, and has some athleticism to him, solid quickness, solid balance, the burst to get after the quarterback. As a pass rusher, he uses his rip move, a bull, and a swim, often used on stunts and twists in that Dom Brown defense in Boston College, again, playing for Ben Albert up there with the Eagles. Solid movement, knows how to take on a double team and hold his ground, can hold his own in the run game. Not immovable at the point of attack, but he does a good job anchoring and holding his ground. And he's got a good motor. He'll give chase outside the numbers. Really impressed me with his competitiveness playing sideline to sideline. From a negative standpoint, obviously, look, this guy went undrafted, not a perfect prospect. When I watched him, he wasn't overly explosive, which was really interesting considering the numbers that he put out during the pre-draft process. He put his hands in the right place, but wasn't a consistent stack and shed guy. And isn't an overly skilled pass rusher at this point. Not necessarily a guy that's going to be a consistent threat on third down out of the gate. But overall, look, Wojcik was the starting nose tackle for the top run defense in the country. There's got to be something that can be said for that. He's not overly flashy, but he's a try-hard nose tackle that can eat up blocks, happy playing that role. I don't know how much value he's going to bring on third down, but I could see him potentially sticking as a backup in a 4-3 scheme as a nose tackle for run situations. And he's got the opportunity to do that right here in Philadelphia. All right, well, that'll do it. Thanks again to Ben Albert and all of you out there listening, whether you're on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, and, of course, on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And if you get the time, again, rate the show, leave us a comment, let us know what you think, and we can keep making this show better each and every week. All that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For my producer, BT, I'm Fran Duffy. We'll talk to you next week.